And we've been doing radio going back to the mid-90s, so we've got a major history here.
Yes, 97. That's 20 years.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that, bro.
Yeah. I'm thankful that I managed to revive some of those shows and save the cassettes of them because there were some really special moments in those days.
No question.
Yeah, but, you know, we're working towards our first special moment, and we're talking about, yes, more than radio, we are undertaking making the first David Love Jones production, because the film company doesn't have a name yet. But David's first film is on the way.
Yes.
It's about this gentleman here, Jason Hoover, and Michael also helping me with the script, and he is going to be the primo narrator in this film, I think, would be just, right, Jason?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that Michael's got the right angle on your story. What do you think?
I think so. And you used to tell me about that three years, David, that it's been in the works. And you told me about this guy, that he'd be on you, Case. I said, David, when are we going to do this project and get it finished?
So you heard about Mike before you saw him. You met him.
He met me. He didn't say a thing, man. We were doing that production in your studio.
Yeah.
And he was sitting in the back, and listening and watching, as a producer would do that. But scared me. I didn't know if he's a producer or whatever, because the producers don't say nothing but talk to the person like you, and that's all you did is talk to him. Yeah. I thought, well, geez, this is going to be heavy, because David is serious.
Yeah. Well,
and you used to tell me, I said, listen, when are we going to do this project, David? You said, when my man comes to town, he'll be in.
He'll be in. Mike's the best co-host of this radio show that's ever been. So, when you come across that kind of talent, you don't forget it easily, you know?
Man, you have to work at it, man. Yeah. I mean, you have to be there. You have to actually live it.
Part of my dream, though, is to convert Michael's talents into a film. Because, not only does he have a great voice, but presented in the right way, I think Mike can be a pretty awesome actor himself.
I think so. I think he's got
natural talent.
First of all, you have to have the personality.
Yeah.
And this man is personality plus.
See, now y'all realize, as dark as I am, I'm going to end up blushing and looking like a black cherry in here. So y'all need to stop on it.
All right. Well, tonight we are going to review further Jason's career, including his Mushroom album. But next, before that, I want to impress these two gentlemen with the depth of my soul music. And we know how we've got to have a certain amount of ladies playing on this show, because female content is very important. FemCon, as it's called. So next is going to be the gigantic talent. Now, Alice Clark, she only made one album. Then she had her family, children, and she went back to her regular life and was never to make a record again. And this talent is humongous, even when you talk about people like Aretha,
Chaka,
and Linda Jones. Mm. So let's check her out next.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Clark here on African Rhythms.
His moment. Oh, why? here.
Requesting you, and I'm
that is Creative Arts Ensemble and some fantastic, I would guess, possibly out of Chicago, somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of progressive like kind of jazz with jazz vocal.
Compilation of a group of bands.
Jeremy
artists.
Underground is the guy who put it together.
Yeah, he said he did this basically out of the Isle of Wight Festival that they had in UK. But, you know, more often than not, Great Britain gets a lot or deserves the credit they do for keeping soul alive, because you never would have seen half these performers even have a career were it not for how that whole rock and soul
I'd say
thing
we're talking great. Unknowns largely.
Yeah, no question.
I mean, it just shows you there's a lot of amazing unknown music out there and quality jazz vocal.
There were some interesting people on here, though, there. You had Gene Page producing a couple of these tracks. This group, they really don't say anything much about, but clearly there was some really good stuff. That reminded me of the Strata East stuff that used to come out of Chicago.
One of the members is Henry Franklin, who was on Black Jazz, and that was an underground jazz label. So this seems to be another band that came forth, but was largely overlooked even within jazz circles, because let's face it, in jazz at that time in the 70s, a lot of snobbery between critics as to what was real jazz or not.
You got to remember that was the fusion era, so people were questioning authenticity. You know, guys were playing things that weren't considered pure jazz, and the jazz people were mad enough because a lot of their stuff wasn't getting played on the radio in the first place. So to have all of this come out in different formats, like smooth jazz is an oxymoron. It's jazz is always smooth. The artists and the musicians are always smooth. The fact that they would say something like this is just ridiculous, because you have to have a mastery of the instrument, whether it's playing something or singing something, to even be qualified to sing jazz. Jazz is like upper echelon stuff. You just don't coming out of somewhere and thinking you're going to sing jazz.
It's like classical music.
Exactly. It is. It's American classical.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, the next artist we're going to listen to, Jason, I know that's somebody that you've heard before and can identify with. And that's a gentleman named Leroy Hudson.
How did you know? That was my favorite, man. Leroy, he knocked everybody out. I mean, Hudson was big for only 2 years, maybe, but he had
he didn't really have a hit.
No.
I mean, he was a little bit overlooked because of, I mean, he was on Curtis Mayfield's label, but I heard, and Mike's mentioned this before, of potentially there was some kind of a conflict between Curtis and himself.
Always the artistic thing gets in the way. When you have creative people, it's bound to happen from time to time. But you're right, Jason, in that time frame, Leroy Hudson was kind of like Norman Conners. He was one of those that allowed other people to be successful through his production work.
Yes.
And when he really did his own thing, like when he was in the disco era doing that Spirit of 76 stuff, that was his shot. But for the most part, he'd rather be behind the...
He tried to get into that disco vibe.
Exactly.
He was forced to, obviously. Mm-hmm. But no, back in his golden era, like Hudson 1 and 2, and I mean, we got to keep in mind, this is the dude that co-wrote The Ghetto.
That's right.
You know, I mean, he and then he had a version of it. I mean, his version did come out on one of his albums, but Hudson 1 and 2, I mean, this is cult underground soul, because in the UK, especially in London, this stuff was getting majorly played.
He was big.
Yeah.
Love to hold you close to me. When I'm with the girl, I feel so good inside. Love to hold you close to me. When you're in my arms, I feel just so alive. Every time I look at you, my mind just starts to wander. When I'm near you, babe, I feel a roaring thunder. It may sound strange, but it's true. All I ever really want to do is to help you feel the feeling, set you rocking in a real land. Cause baby, I'm love to hold you close to me. Bring me up, girl, when I'm down. Baby, I need you around. Love to hold you close to me. Girl, I like the way you do me. Send your body heat on through me. The way you give yourself to me in sweet submission. I never thought I'd find myself caught up in this condition. Make a deal, me and you. You just say that you'll be true. And I'll do all I can to give you love at your command. Cause I love to hold you close to me. But when I'm with you, make me feel so good. me. Set you set my soul on fire. Won't you take me higher and higher? Every time I look at you, my mind just starts to wander. And when I'm near you, babe, I feel a roaring thunder. I may sound strange, but it's true. All I ever really want to do is to help you feel the feeling that you're rocking and I'm reeling. And baby, I
Leroy Hudson, the genius of Leroy Hudson, Curtum Records out of Chicago. And you know, that originally didn't come on a 45, but later on, the British people liked that song so much. Love to Hold You Close. That's from Hudson 2.
That was a slick production, David.
But no, Leroy Hudson, fantastic talent. But we've got kind of an obscure record next. And Jason, you say you don't remember much about this band.
No, I said I heard about
them. You heard about them.
But never heard them.
The Soulmates. So they must have come along basically in the late 60s in Vancouver. It says that the guy that promoted them, that got this record out, Blackstrap Molasses, I actually never knew that this record was from Vancouver before, but you know what? On the back, Condor Music, Burnaby, British Columbia.
Wow.
So this was made here. And Johnny Kitchen is this mysterious producer, entrepreneur, L.A. guy that came up here and got this made. Strange.
You ever hear of him, Jason?
I never heard the record. I heard of them.
Yeah.
And they were around the city.
Yeah.
But I was singing and working and on the road a lot.
Yeah.
So I never got a chance to see them.
So they got bookings with some of the places you would have played?
Same place, probably, that I did, that brought up the American acts and used them in Victoria, Vancouver, as well as Seattle. And it was a road. It was a route for a lot of the new musicians coming
It's interesting, around. Though, that the L.A. connection, because that would come up a few years later when your Mushroom album was mastered in L.A. Mm-hmm. So there is a connection there.
It was mastered in L.A. and recorded partially.
Yeah, well, partially recorded in L.A. Mm-hmm. We were top session musicians, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But let's let the listeners hear. Here is a 1969 local soul record released right here in Vancouver.
I see her.
I mean, that had a Philly feel to it. It had no kind of feel even close to, you know, anything done out the West Coast. But
yeah, Vancouver Soul, the Soulmates. I mean, what happened to, we're going to have to talk to some of our friends and try to get some history on who these guys are and where they went from here. Did they ever put out anything else? 7-inch? Did they break up? We don't know anything.
Clearly, they had to play somewhere live. That's why I was asking you again, Jason. Like, you never heard of these cats in passing?
I never heard of the music.
Yeah, I mean, being their promoter was from L.A., you know, it's conceivable that he put this together and tried to get some reaction or build some hype, and maybe he skipped town. Who knows? You know, I mean, like we don't really know.
It's like you said, David. It's got good feel. It's a good record, but it was a hustle record. They didn't have a major label.
Yeah,
they didn't have major production.
Burnaby, British Columbia.
Well, you know, this goes back to where we started.
Yeah,
you got places where this music's appreciated. So you're going to have DJs playing, you're going to have people pushing the music, and it'll get that exposure. We just talked about L.A. being involved in this. L.A.'s really not a music city.
Not
for soul music, you know. Yeah. It never really was. And when we talked about artists like Jesse James and all that from the Northern Soul and all that stuff, they never got that kind of exposure.
Well, let's face it, what L.A.'s good for, and I don't want to generalize here, but financing and backing up or getting a piece of the action with projects, whether that be film or music. I mean, back then, I mean, let's talk about your 1975 released Mushroom Records album, because that was made here at Mushroom Studios, but yet it was mastered and finished in Los Angeles.
You know? That's true.
So it was the connection cannot be denied. In fact, if you look on the personnel on here, we look at, you know, who played on this record. Your brother, Lou Hoover.
Wonderful drummer.
You know, he was involved. But the one notable person, Mike, is King Arison.
Yes,
you know,
like, King Arison.
He was in Mushroom. He was right there. I met him.
Oh, wow.
King. Yeah.
How did he get involved?
He was still being used on the West Coast.
Incredible bongo band.
Bongo.
He's on that one.
I mean, he's on
Vancouver.
Which was made at Mushroom.
That's right. That's right.
Cambase,
One of the greatest Kunga Bunga players that I ever met. Plus, they had personality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's notable that he was involved.
Yes.
You know?
But he came up here to do it.
This track, which came out as a 45, I believe it was the third or fourth 45 off the album, but Sing With Soul, tell us about this. It's got a spoken intro.
What a song. Yeah. We had the guy that plays Elvis is Presley's bass player, which is really something that I'll always remember, and because I always thought that this man made a lot of the rock and roll scenes without being there. I mean, people were copying him. Everybody was on to Elvis Presley. Myself, being from Edmonton, that's all I got was Elvis Presley and the guys that did Tequila, you know, and all those kind of things. I got hardly any soul. Any soul that I got was from my uncles or the...
Okay, but about the song. I mean, okay, so it says here that it was written by Tim Gross?
I wrote the song.
But I mean,
he wrote the feel. Okay.
Yeah.
Doom, doom.
Right.
Doom, doom,
because
doom.
I mean, although it doesn't say so here,
it seems like
it's your improvised lyrics, right?
Yeah.
I mean, who else would have come up with that commentary you made in it?
Yeah. Just me, man.
Yeah. But then why did they not mention that?
Yeah. Listen, it's all about money.
Yeah.
It's all about money, and it ain't damn thing funny. The thing about it is, I was suppressed. I had an album out, and I couldn't even advertise it. They had full control where it went.
Let's the listeners listen to it now, just so they can see this improvised lyrics that you provide.
All right.
When I was a young man, I was raised in the Lower East Side of this city, and I learned many things. You could say I got my schooling here, understand? You see, I used to work at my daddy's bar, dear, and here is where I learned the most important thing. So, you know what I mean? Soul Jack. Daddy's bar wasn't much, but it was very, very funky. Now let me tell you about it. I can remember it just like yesterday. when Georgia Sam, the local man, pulled up in his long, long pink Cadillac. And sometimes he would bring in a couple of girls he'd been working late that night. The soulful women, the women who knows how to love cause they make their living at it. When these girls was feeling down, they go out to the back room and start clapping their hands and singing and carrying on. And I thought, now what kind of a song could make these women happy when they were feeling so blue? So one night I went out to the back room and I asked one of the girls. She just looked at me and said, son, it don't matter what you sing as long as you sing with soul. Lesson I've never forgotten and a feeling I carry with me all the time, cause it's a cold, wicked world we live in, and you know how it feels when things ain't going for the best and the blues done got you down. So when I feel myself in this situation, I think what these soulful women taught me, and that was
the big local soul legend, Jason Hoover, who we've got a special guest on the show again tonight. This was back in 1975 that he released this album. Pretty much the top soul funk record ever released out of Vancouver. Is that the Hart guitar player on this one?
I think so. I believe so. In
Hart's guitar player. Yeah. Right. So, because, I mean, he's on the next one. He's on Show Me Some Slack, too.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed writing that. It was should have been called Cut Me Some Slack.
So that was Howard Leese on guitar?
Howard Leese, Hart's guitar player. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what happened after this Mushroom locally released record came out, shortly after that, Dreamboat Annie, Hart came out, same label, and blew up, right?
Let me tell you this story really quickly, very quickly. I was the only one signed to Mushroom Records, okay?
Well, that's not true, because Paul Horn was on
Paul Horn was the first. Yeah. I'm talking about as a group or vocalist. Now, Paul Horn did not sing. He played saxophone.
He had vocals on some of his records, though.
Yeah, but he hired vocalists.
Yeah.
But the thing is, all the stuff of Paul Horn was not all recorded here in Vancouver.
Some of it was. I looked at some of it, and it was recorded.
Look it up,
here.
And you'll also see that he has had other releases.
He lived on the island, so some of it was recorded
That's
there.
That's right.
Yeah. But no, Paul Horn was kind of a local pioneer, and he was on Mushroom Records. But basically, when that Heart record hits, that must have been bittersweet for you.
Well, I knew I was out. I knew that I was out because I had, when you walked the Mushroom Records, big, huge picture of me that sat there for nearly, well, quite, almost two years. And I was their top act. I was what they were pushing.
But how long until Dreamboat Annie came out? There's got to have been within a year of your record.
It was about 15 months I was famous in Mushroom. When you walk in, it was all of me, right?
And then Dreamboat Annie hit.
Did it ever hit?
I mean, that's one of the biggest selling rock records now. I mean, it's huge.
That's right. Yeah. And then the thing was, I was knocked out. I was knocked out of because they were going to a different direction. Yeah. Now, they expected after the album here, the Apple album on Mushroom of my record, they expected big things to happen. Well, the guy that was promoting it, he died of a brain hemorrhage. I guess he was doing too much cocaine.
Jeez.
But he was a wonderful promoter.
Yeah. But let's face it, I mean, the album netted at least four singles. You know, Sing Me Some Soul was the third or fourth single, right?
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. I mean, although the next track we're going to listen to, Show Me Some Slack, although it became a cult international track, it never was released as a single, but they did put four, and that is quite a few. And some of that stuff must have been played on the radio at times.
Oh, the radio announcers here in Vancouver are so wonderful for me. And a lot of people don't play Homeboy.
Yeah.
And no matter where you are.
But see, the question to ask then is, after Heart busted wide with Dreamboat Annie like they did, they would have had money in the budget to push you as well. That's the question, why didn't they do it? Mm. Especially when for 15 months it looked like that's exactly where they were going to go.
That's right. You got that down. Yeah, you must have the history on it. The thing about it, there was also conflict with the guy that was pushing my record. But he was not really pushing my record. Just one of the things they would throw down along with Dreamboat Annie. Okay. One time he had to push me, and he was I know he was made more.
Well, he's got many more. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But getting back to the Mushroom album, so Show Me Some Slack. Mm-hmm. How did the song come about?
That's all I have, okay.
You co-wrote Show Me Some Slack with Dennis Green.
That's right. Dennis Green is still playing. He's a pioneer now.
What does he play?
He plays guitar, all of them, man, and plays bass as well.
So he wrote those guitar lines that the Heart guitar player
That's what I was telling you.
Mm-hmm. So how did it come up? Well, what were your influences with Show Me Some Slack?
There was no influences. I heard what Dennis was trying to do. We were in my living room, and I said, well, listen, man, why don't we call this song Show Me Some Slack, I said. And Dennis says, that sounds really tough. So we went and we worked it, and I wrote it. I get the feeling, baby, in my living room, every single day.
Yeah.
You're demanding more attention.
Was it about a situation? Way. Was it about a real-life situation?
No, it was just made up. I made it up.
Yeah,
I just said...
It sounds sincere.
Yeah, it sounds like it really is a story. A lot of people ask me that very same question. How many years now? This is at least 1975. Yeah. That's how long people are asking me, what are you talking about? Who is that real?
Yeah.
You know, and hey, I'm just happy to get recognized, you know. I mean, the DJs in Vancouver... The DJs in Vancouver, I'm talking about when they were called CKLG and C-Fun, they loved me, and they played me all the time. It was really nice to be driving home and hear your record and go to the other station.
Were you complimented, though, like to meeting me later on, and we've done a bit of radio together? Me and other international guys like the Show Me Some Slack track?
Yeah.
Because because they even made a homemade video for it on YouTube, so that shows the love for that song.
Yep.
All right, well, listeners, let's check this out next. This is from the 1975 album, and this is a underground cult soul worldwide hit.
Yes.
Show Me Some Slack.
Single day, you're demanding more attention.
Locally made, locally written, locally produced, and mastered in L.A., and should have been a huge song. But Show Me Some Slack, one of the finest moments of Jason's 1975 LP.
It was during the time of Tower of Power is when I was influenced on that song. We had our horns. We had everybody, Lenny Williams. I had to take that part, man, and I just tried to stretch it out and get in the same vein as Tower of Power.
Yeah, no, it's a sophisticated arrangement, ain't it?
Very sophisticated. That's not rock chords you're listening to. Those are jazz chords.
Those are jazz chords. Seventh upon,
those are jazz sevenths, eighths, and ninths. Yeah, those are jazz chords. There's no question about it.
The ninths are usually jazz chords.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's a really special song. To me, I hear little hints of my love for Willie Hutch, in the vocalizing, the nuances.
How did you grab that out of the air? Wow. He was wonderful. He was a great influence on me.
Very versatile.
So maybe that's what you're hearing is a lot.
Well, of course, I think that every piece of art, there's echoes of others. But, I mean, it's only an echo. It's still all you,
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, it's pretty special.
No.
That is the fifth dimension. Takes you back, eh, Mike? You know, those guys were quality, classy soul.
You know what they remind me of? They remind me of a group version of Jackie Wilson. Because you remember all of those Brunswick productions he did?
Yeah.
He was always dabbling in opera lyrics and things of that nature. Yeah. And the productions were always kind of taking away from his soul rather than augmenting it. And I think the fifth dimension very much that same way.
Yeah.
Every now and then, like in One Less Bell to Answer, you feel like Marilyn McCoo is like, she can go there, right? And, you know, when they do the Aquarius part and the brother gets down, they're going there. But they really had a style and they wanted to keep them in a certain place. So that's why they did
it.
It wouldn't be.
It's not surprising that Fifth Dimension, I mean, this is a song that British people have picked up on, but it's not surprising that they would have some classy songs that got a little bit hidden, because I think that, you know, these acts were pushing out all kinds of polished material.
Sure.
And like we were saying about A&Rs not always picking the right ones, and that would be an example. Next, we're going to go gospel, because here's this new gentleman, Greg Belson, and he's a gospel DJ, just played at Glastonbury doing a UK tour. But this gentleman discovers unknown gospel. Let's just see if we can find this record. So it's Divine Disco, and it's disco between 74 and 84. And I've played this track before, Mike, but you know how I love to go to church.
Hello.
Herman Harris and the Voices of Faith, Hope, and Love. How about that for a name?
That's nice. That's very nice. I like that.
The track is called Give Yourself to Jesus.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I've done that years ago, man.
All right, let's go to church.
Give yourself to Jesus.
that's the real deal right there. That's the gospel. And let's repeat their name. The voices of faith, hope, and love. How about that?
Well, I think that's fantastic. Being a writer, I know that that is a scoop, as well as the name of that last song you played. I gave myself to Jesus. I mean, that's tough.
Kind well, of misleading that the title would be Divine Disco. That don't sound like disco at
no.
all.
That's like no, that's the most that's the most non-disco track on the album, which is the one I like the most, of course.
But, it sounded good. You picked a good one.
Yeah. No. Give yourself to Jesus. Yeah. I mean, but you sang five-part harmony?
Oh, man. That scares me when people talk about five-part harmony, David, because it's the ultimate. It's
and
the ultimate.
The woman who gets to take the lead, that's quite a job, eh? You know, for her to just go and improv on top like that.
She's spiraling. You can't do that in five-part harmony. No. Only the lead singer can do that. It doesn't matter, male or female, only the lead singer is allowed to do that. Everybody, even if they get in the feeling, they got to stay in their lane because they don't, it doesn't work. So,
it doesn't work, exactly. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's really tough on the fifth part to sing natural voice. But it's talking about the range and the rhythm and the phrasing.
Mm-hmm. The pure inspiration like that. But one track, getting back to your Mushroom album, but one track we should talk about, She's My Lady. Tell me about that song.
Well, this is what happens, okay? You have to have something, you have to have a something that people want to hear again. That's what I was taught. And in order to have a creative song that you know you want to be a winner, you have to have something in it. She's My Lady was the choice after Love Will Get You. Now, Love Will Get You played right across Canada and played in Halifax and everywhere. She's My Lady, I got ripped off from the Mushroom label.
So for one moment, they were promoting it, and then all of a sudden, the bottom dropped out as the Dreamboat Annie took off, it seems.
There was strife. I was not happy.
Yeah. Well, why don't we check it out now, She's My Lady, because this, if people look up on YouTube, Jason Hoover is live from an 86-gig TV show that he did in Toronto. They recorded She's My Lady, and that is 11 years after the record was released, but yet you were still doing it live, and it's quite a good funky live version, but let's check out the original
from The
Mushroom. Yeah, all right.
To me, well, I spend all my time trying to make another dime so I can live a better life of luxury. Though the going is tough, I still try to get enough, and it makes me feel so good to know she believes in me. She's my lady. Lovely lady, my sexy baby, she's good to me, and I love her, you know I love her, she always touches me so tenderly. Each and every
funky lady, my sexy baby. She's good to me. She's my lady, foxy lady, my pretty baby. She's good to me. Oh, I love her. Oh, you know I love her. She always loves me so tenderly.
And that's one of the four singles off the Mushroom album, She's My Lady, and one of the most lasting songs.
No, that was Dennis Green, one of the finest unknown guitar players in Canada. He's doing his
own
thing.
So that's not Hart's guitar player that's on the other songs?
No, and Love Will Get You, I do believe it's only he played on two.
Oh, I see.
You only played on two. Because Dennis Green's named right up there for being in all the songs.
Howard Lees is the other guy.
Yeah. Howard Lees is the other guy. Dennis Green, we loved him. He was great. He's just... I was just saying about Dennis Green, you know, he's the unknown championship bout guitar player that I've ever worked with, including Harmata. Harmata was fantastic. But
you'd like to have had Jimmy on that album, actually.
Yeah, I wanted Jimmy on an album. We had a little dispute.
Yeah,
and he said he wasn't interested because he had heard from other people that I was using another guitar. I've never used anybody else.
You respected Jimmy Harmata.
Oh yeah,
and you know, you guys have had your, like any band members, you've had your ups and downs over the years. But we're gonna reunite all you guys when we do our shoots,
and
we're gonna let bygones be bygones, and we're gonna move forward because Jimmy Harmata and yourself, of course, wrote King Size, one of the most monumental local tracks ever made on the R&B scene, and that would go back to 68. And
69.
Jimmy was also part of other songs that you wrote, like Rhythm Is the Way, possibly?
Rhythm Is the
Way. Yeah. So the Mushroom record, it was a lifetime achievement for you, though.
Well, let me tell you, it was really nice to have an album out after
finally got to
many
make your
songs.
Soul Funk album, which is the Mushroom album, came after that, and you were no longer working with the same musicians. There was no longer Bob Kidd, Jimmy Harmata, any of those people.
It was a step,
but
a step up.
They were really good musicians. I mean, King Erickson, internationally regarded funk percussionist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the last licks on She's My Lady, the reason that works, I can imagine, in this format, in this area, is because it is a rock ballad. I mean, it's a rock
funk ballad.
It's rock tinged, and because of that, that gave them an excuse to play it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not trying to be funny.
That was crossover.
That's definitely crossover action. Yeah.
That crossover taste, but not big.
Right.
Yeah.
It did in Canada, but I'm saying I wanted it to have a hit in Los Angeles. It's played on I forget the name of the station, but it's very, very famous station.
I'll say this. For the market, if that had been played back east, it was similar to what the Isley Brothers were going through in their 3+3 period when Ernie took over and whatnot, and Jimmy taught Ernie, so of that stuff. All of that influence is coming out.
Lots of guitar, exactly, like the Isley Brothers.
Yeah, I like the Isley Brothers, and actually, we thought of the Isley Brothers before we actually... Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. All right, well, we're going to have to bring this particular show to an end with Jason Hoover and Michael Ingram. But the last thing that we're going to talk about is, over a year ago now, is the sad passing of David Bowie. And we're going to go out with one of his funkiest tracks, Stay, which, strangely, even though I was a big Bowie fan... I never heard or got into the song, even though I had Station to Station album, and I was well into Young Americans and well into his exposure for me for black music. But Bowie had the funk. Bowie went on TV and he had the respect.
He had the respect.
Of the black community, and he had the funk. Truly,
he did. He put them in check when he said straight up, how come you guys are not playing the black artists on MTV?
I know he was very upfront.
Years MTV, he was very upfront about it, and we always dug him. But the fact that he did Soul Train and all the other shows and whatnot, he even hesitated. He wanted to be there, and that's a big difference from a lot of the wannabes, like say a Wild Cherry that had one song and really didn't. They weren't sincere about what they were playing, you know, and that makes a big difference. We loved Bowie.
I mean, I think that, like with Young Americans, like for him to have such devastatingly soulful backup singers like he did,
even just to
have the gall, like to put his vocals above those, he had to come up with something pretty good. And I think in the end, but I realize now that, you know, Golden Years, Stay, and these other songs, he really showed how he could embed funk into the rock mainstream. Like, without any compromise, you know, I mean, he really had the best people he worked with.
I love the boy. If you hear him and Luther Vandross doing that harmonizing on Young Americans, you'll say, okay, I haven't heard this before. Yes.
Got to dance on the field in BC Place when David Bowie opened up BC Place. It had just been built, and 50,000 people came out. It was right after Scary Monsters, like it was a couple year or two after that got released, so early 80s. And man, what a gig. And then me and my Bowie fanatic friends from Calgary, I worked in the record store, and they came out, and man, we were dancing to Young Americans on the field in BC Place, and it was like a top Vancouver moment, I would say.
They had the big screen, so you see him do it.
Oh, man. There were so many people there. Bowie looked out at the crowd. He's like, there's so many of you out there. But I'm really digging you guys because everybody was dancing. 50,000 people unhip Vancouver dancing.
Oh,
it was amazing.
A beautiful stadium, man. If everybody was dancing, I mean, it must have been great.
It wasn't an ideal place for a gig. But, man, we made it ideal because, I mean, this was David Bowie.
Yeah.
And he was at... That was really, I mean, arguably towards the end of one hell of a period he had, you know, of 10, 12... or more years of just putting out, no matter what he touched, you know, he went Berlin Trilogy, he went Brian Eno, he went Iggy Pop, no matter what he did, it was gold.
He did the movie, Absolute Beginners. If you pick it up, if you watch it, that was all him. And it's a classic now.
Bowie is a great actor. Yeah. I mean, he was a really good actor.
It really makes me upset that he's gone because I was just getting into it. Like, I listened to Fame, just out of the blue, put it on my record.
So good. So funky. All right. Well, listen, we got to end it there, but, you know, we're going to be back. So, Mike, take it out, my brother.
Well, whether you are in Victoria, downtown East Side, where I used to live and love, or out here by the University of beautiful British Columbia, if you want to know where the soul trees grow, the roots can be found right here on African Rhythms.
Peace and love to you, Jason Hoover.
All right. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service,
ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available,
and supporting network development.